Good morning. The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar. He is filling in for J.D. Bunkus. He's Justin Cuthbert. You can follow them on the socials, at Ailish Forfar, at J.C. Cuthbert. Is that right, Justin? J.C. Cuthbert?
You nailed it, Blake. You nailed it.
Perfect. It's, it's the Fan Morning Show. Couple days.
How can
Justin
they follow
here?
You, Blake? I mean, Blake, you didn't give yourself some love.
Oh, whatever. Blake Murphy, ODC. I don't, I'm not too worried about it. I don't like to do the whole thing JD does of going into my social handles, how they're different on one than the other. It's not
you
that
can find you. Yep. Got it.
Yeah. You know me. Google me. Or whatever it is people say.
Okay.
Well, now, hey,
you're the
look,
one with 40,000 followers. We get it.
Yeah, I got my SEO back now that there's no longer a tag team called Blake and Murphy. So
there you go.
So I'm easier to find now. Guys, Canada at the World Juniors last night, not the most interesting of games. 11-2 victory over Austria, coming off a 6-3 victory over Czechia. Before we get into the games and Canada's performance, Ailish, you have something is stuck in your craw? If I'm remembering that term correctly?
Yes, that's a term from the very first week. If you've been listening since then, you're a loyal listener. You know what stuck in your craw means. This is stuck in my craw. You know, I just can't really get on board with the ref's little comments before the puck drop. I just think it's so cheesy. And if I was playing, I'd be like, just shut up and drop the puck. Like, hey, boys, whoever asked Santa for minus 40 degree weather, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, hey, just shut up, man. Like, why do you want this 5 seconds of fame? I don't know. Am I just like old and washed? I don't think that that's cute and funny. It just gives me like a little bit of a cringe, you know, like secondhand embarrassment. I hate that feeling, but I get it when the refs have their little moment to do their little thing like, you know, eat your cereal. Hee hee hee. Let me drop the puck. I don't know. Weigh in.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it's so contrived, right? Because like the moment they're given the opportunity, they know. I don't know if they're mic'd up, but I guess there's probably like a road mic on the camera that's like right in front of them. So they know they have this opportunity to say something. They probably have to prepare it. It's just a contrived moment because it's clearly put in by the broadcast team, the producers. They tried to build this little thing where they'd have a little bit of sound, a little innovation. We're going to talk to someone who's all about innovation later on in the show with Sunday Night Football when we talk about John Madden. But not every innovation works. And they've been trying to jam this down our throats here for a while now with the little comment from the referees before they drop the puck. They're all trying to be funny. They're all trying to have their little moment, but it's contrived. It just doesn't work. I'm with you.
Do you think that they find out that they're the head ref dropping the puck and they like go home before the game, they're at the hotel and they're like going through what to write. Like they're like, okay, this is more of my big opportunity. Like, what's going to be my in? I want to go viral. I want mine to be the one that they're, you know, cutting and looping all over the internet. Like, and they're writing down, like they're running through it. They're practicing in front of the mirror. Like I can't stand it. I don't know why. It just really, really upsets me.
Yeah, if you've ever seen 8 Mile, the scene where Eminem's riding on the bus and he's scribbling down his ciphers, that's what the refs are doing on the bus into the barn. Is just like, yeah, can I make this joke here? And then it just comes off as that Steve Buscemi meme, the like, how do you do, fellow kids? It's like, mm-hmm. This would be one thing if it were in the NHL, where it would still be really cringe because like, the absolute last person you want to hear from or notice during a game is the referee or the umpire or whoever. Like, it's the whole thing of the very best referees are the ones you don't notice and don't know the names of. It's the last thing we want to hear from. But it's an extra layer of cringe because they're teens. So not only do the hockey players probably not want to hear from the referees in this fashion, but also, like, it's a bunch of teenage boys who are probably just like, shut up, dude. I don't know. I remember how I treated referees, and I can't imagine being super thrilled to have these little chirps.
That's the thing about referees. There's like really nothing you can do to endear yourself. Like it is a thankless
job
in that way. But if you stay out of the way, if you remain anonymous, you will get some respect at the end of the day. But you can't really get really earned respect, certainly, with a clever comment before you drop the puck. Just drop the puck is something you hear from players all the time. So just drop the puck.
You can earn respect, however, if you're a 16-year-old that scores 4 goals for the first time since it was Wayne Gretzky who did that. And that was last night, Connor Bedard, just absolutely coming out on fire. He's obviously going to be the first round, first selection in 2023. I think teams are going to be tanking for him after you see what he's done so far in 2 games. He was a bit quiet in the first game, but last night, I mean, yes, they're playing Austria. They were a 10-goal favorite or whatever for the game. You saw that 5-0 after the first period. It was going to be a blowout. But his goals were, the third one especially, was absolutely beautiful. But he's, you know, he's definitely creating a name for himself, which is the best part about the World Juniors. We're getting to see him at 16 years old play with guys that are a couple of years older. He's at the big stage. Pressure clearly isn't, you know, an F factor at all. He was trending last night on Twitter. It's a very exciting time if you're a Canadian hockey fan to see him at this stage already just blowing our minds and expectations.
Not to be negative right off the bat here, but there's something stuck in my craw. I think I got that right. As much as I love the Ailish Forfar bubble, there under no circumstances should Connor Bedard have to wear the full cage at this event. I mean, I get there's like an age restriction thing, but you know, he plays in the Western Hockey League and wears a visor. It's not a big deal. I'm not sure why they're still clinging to this rule, because not that it really matters. You still see his face because he's got the Forfar bubble on, but like, I don't know, ruin the highlight just a little
honestly,
bit. But with Bedard, like, he got the opportunity, right? Like the Canadians had an injury to Xavier Bourgault. Connor Bedard starts as the 13th forward, moves up in his first opportunity. Yes, it's Austria. Yes, it's not, you know, he hasn't proven himself against a big time side and been that like difference maker from that standpoint in a big game. But he took every opportunity and he was given with that 4-goal performance. He was probably the best player on the ice, which is a huge, huge thing because he's got his name beside Gretzky in terms of his performance. He's already got more goals. He got more goals than McDavid had points as a 16-year-old in that performance. His introduction, really. He's been around for a while, been talked about for a while, but that was his introduction to many hockey fans, and he did not disappoint one bit.
Yeah, I don't have as much issue with the cage, just if I'm, or the fishbowl, if I'm picking gripes with the IIHF, that's way down the list right now.
That's fair. That is fair.
But yeah, I thought it was great. You know, he's already, you mentioned McDavid, you mentioned Gretzky, he's already matched Crosby for points in terms of as a 16-year-old. So this is rare for a 16-year-old to come out and do this. And I think if you want to apply the caveats of, yeah, you know, the minutes are a little sheltered. He's playing against Austria. There's some score effects there. Hey, his nicest goal is the one he didn't score on with that nifty move in front. But if you're talking about carrying a 16-year-old on a roster like this and playing him as the 13th or maybe even 14th forward, this is what you're hoping for, right? You're hoping to play him in an opportunity like this where not only does he perform really well results-based, but you see what he can offer in the offensive zone at least. And maybe your confidence is there, you know, moving forward in this tournament. You know, they'll get him back from suspension and there'll be a little bit of a crunch. But, you know, would it surprise anyone if as the level of competition ratchets up here with Germany who beat Czechia and then Finland on Friday, you know, if Bedard's still very firmly in the mix, at least on the power play, do you think he's carved out that role for the rest of the tournament, Ailish, or at least for the rest of the round robin here?
Yeah, you know, I look forward to more competition. It's really tough to evaluate when you're playing a team like Austria because I don't want to say bad habits can form, but I've played in those games where it's a blowout and you're almost like playing for points. And I don't think that that's what was happening last night with Canada, but you can definitely come in with a little bit of not an underestimation of your opponent, but Germany can definitely pose way more of a fight. So it will be great to see what he could do against bigger teams. I think that he will get that opportunity just because it would be quite shocking to have somebody get four goals and be like the MVP of the game and then not get that opportunity next. And I think that he deserves it, just to even just see what he can provide against a tougher competition, because the next game, Finland, is definitely the biggest test. So I think maybe easing in with a Germany to see how he does on a bigger role. And if that's too much, then you pull back for the big game against Finland.
Yeah, I mean, to no one's surprise here, it's always set up well for Canada. I mean, I guess they earn their position being right on the side that they are on, but I feel like the scheduling always works out perfectly for the team. And I think in this case, it works out pretty well for Connor Bedard, who gets the opportunity to sort of, you know, soak in the first game against a decent opponent, but one that Canada should always beat, gets into the lineup against the inferior side, gets a little bit of a step up in competition here against Germany, and then we'll see where he is at when they get to Finland and in the knockout round games. But I think at this point, there's no way you could really deny him. With the way he played, with the way it seems like he can perform on any line, it just seems like Connor Bedard is going to be a major part of this team for Canada. And I want to get in a little bit of like the Shane Wright sort of Connor Bedard situation at some point here. But he's outplayed Shane Wright for sure, and he's outplayed a lot of Canadians, it seems, with that performance. And you know, obviously scoring four goals is a big time performance. But just everything else in his game, I think, was pretty polished as well. And you mentioned like you can get in some bad habits playing Austria. I think the best thing, besides the Bedard performance from that one, is the fact that those like complacencies didn't really come into their game. I thought they played a very, very honest game, despite the scoreline being what it was. I think they sort of, they didn't get into the point where they were trying to run up the score. I think those goals in the third period almost came naturally because they were doing things right before they got to the third period and the situation where they could run up the score a little bit.
And you saw, like, even after his goals, he just had a very not stoic response. And it can be really difficult as a 16-year-old on that stage to not be like overwhelmed by the opportunity. The moment you score four goals, you obviously know that that's going to be kind of history making. I was really impressed by just the level of calm and composure that he had, even after with some of the post-game interviews. People are so obviously so electric to talk to him and to give him the praise. And he just responded with, you know, I'm 16 years old. I really haven't done much in my hockey career. And I know like they're kind of polished media wise, like hockey players don't say too much, but as a 16-year-old to have that level of composure, it was just really impressive to see. Not that I expect him to be all rah, rah, you know, I'm the best ever, but just a tiny thing to note is like, if he continues to have that level of composure and that level of discipline, I think that, you know, he can be one of the best players we've ever seen. And just stats wise alone, having more than McDavid did at 16 years old is something that you get really excited about as a fan. And I just wanted to say on the Russian side, or the athletes from Russia, I'm not sure what they're going by this time around, but just having their young star Michkov be as incredible as he is at the same time that Bedard is, I saw some tweets about, is this the new Sidney Crosby, Alexander Ovechkin of the new era that we're going to see? And that got me really excited. There's two 16-year-olds, you know, blowing away expectations already at the World Juniors. In a couple years, they'll be obviously at the NHL level. And, you know, that as a fan, that definitely gave me a little bit of the goosebumps thinking, wow, we could have two, you know, stars in our midst that are just growing up going to be rivals, which that to me is kind of the essence of what the World Juniors does provide.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what makes this tournament exciting, is the fact that you have the future on display right now, and especially with those two players. But I think you nailed it, Ailish, with the composure and having the awareness in those. I didn't see the post-game quotes. I just read them on Twitter. But I think he made the comment of, like, when he was compared to Gretzky, just based on what they did as juniors, that he didn't think he was going to score 2,800 points in the NHL or something like that. Like, that just shows an awareness of, like, who you are and that not getting way ahead of yourself. I think that was very, very impressive. I'll get into it right away because I mentioned that I wanted to talk a little bit about Wright and Bedard. This is almost shaping up. It would be in reverse order, but like sort of an Austin Matthews, Nico Hischier sort of thing here. And you shouldn't get too excited about, or one way or another, about how a player performs at this level. But Connor Bedard looks like a much more advanced prospect in terms of what they are at their age group and what they can do right now at this level. So yeah, there's teams that are lining up to be bad this year, maybe in hopes of getting Shane Wright. Arizona's there. Buffalo's there. Maybe think about being the worst team in the NHL next year, because Connor Bedard looks like more of the Matthews McDavid ilk than Shane Wright. And I know that's not completely fair, but the dynamism we've seen from Bedard in comparison to Wright is pretty stark in terms of contrast.
Wright's been a little underwhelming and at times not super, he doesn't pop at least through two games. Yeah. And maybe that's, a steadier game and he's playing more responsibly and in a more responsible role. All that's understandable. It's only two games, but yeah, he certainly hasn't popped on the offensive end quite like some of these other players. So obviously there's a lot of positive with the Canadian World Junior team through two games, 11-2 win, 6-3 win, monster goal differential, Perfetti and Power look awesome, Bedard's cool. It has not been the most positive of weeks and weekends for junior hockey in general, though. The IIHF decided last week earlier this week, rather, that all January events are canceled except for the World Junior Hockey Championship. USA's program and a bunch of others have reached out asking the IIHF to reconsider the cancellation of January's under-18 Women's World Championship in Sweden. Eilish, I'll start with you. This has to, before even looking at the comments, which I found, the IIHF responded to this, I found the comments to be pretty condescending to women's hockey and fans of women's hockey. But this is this a troubling continued pattern to you when it comes to this stuff where, hey, World Juniors is the moneymaker on the boys' side, so we're going to do everything we can to protect that. But hey, if we have to sacrifice women's hockey or not make the same concessions and efforts on that side, well, so be it. That's the situation we're in. Like, to me, this is just, it's saying the quiet part loud when it comes to how an organization like the IIHF treats women's hockey versus men's hockey.
Yeah, it's extremely disappointing. I saw a lot of people obviously feeling the same way that I'm feeling as a fan, as a former women's hockey player, someone that really looks forward to these tournaments. There's not a lot of opportunity for women to be at the world stage with under-18s and then world championships really being the big moments. It's really disappointing that they can't find an answer. They just canceled the tournament. And I know that there's a lot going on in the world with COVID. And if it's unsafe, it's unsafe. But just the idea that rescheduling isn't something that they're able to find, that's the thing, is it's the second year in a row that this tournament has been canceled with no plans to reschedule. And now we've even seen the Ontario Women's Hockey Association, the OWHA, volunteering to host because they understand like this is a huge moment for women under 18, especially because if you think of it, a lot of these girls or women at this point are either looking for an opportunity to go to university. This is their kind of their chance to showcase their talent or to get in the women's Olympic team conversation. It's very rare that somebody doesn't represent Canada at the U18s and gets that chance as a U22 player or a national team player. And I've obviously been in this little world for a while where if you don't make U18s, it's really, as I said, difficult to get yourself in the network. So if you miss that opportunity, it's tough to give yourself that future perspective that you might make the Olympics. So that's the thing that bothers me the most, is I've seen teammates of mine represent their country at U18s, at U22s, and at the World Championship, and then at the Olympics. And that's kind of the pipeline that Hockey Canada has created. And so not getting that chance, just like I think about the future of the game being possibly affected by these two tournaments in a row. And finally, just the way that they tried to explain it, being like, it's a COVID issue, not a gender issue. Now, this is like multiple times in a year that they've had to make these statements about, it's not because of the gender, it's because of this. It's like, once you kind of create this pattern where you need to do these giant press releases and say, oh, it's about money or it's about COVID, it's like, have you not realized that fans expect more. Like, we're not going to be happy with crumbs or with the fact that you're just going to cancel and say, hey, we don't make enough money from it. How are you going to grow the game? Like, there's just this, like, there's a loophole that you're looking for that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, this has not been a particularly strong start for IIHF president Luke Tardif, who took over, I believe, in September. I mean, he's obviously inheriting a difficult world full of hurdles when putting on these events. But Blake, you nailed it. I mean, you said he said the quiet part out loud, and that's exactly what he did, being defensive on Twitter. Now, that's not the way to go about things. I think listening to what the discourse is online is important for people in these roles. But going back at, like, you're a Twitter troll or you're in that world is not the way to approach these things. You know, this has been a really difficult time for the development of sports. So, like, what's happening sort of below the surface? Mm-hmm. We see the surface level stuff. We see the NHL forging onward. We see the NBA and the NFL doing the same in Major League Baseball. We see the World Juniors survive, whether it's in a bubble or whether it's in the scenario it is right now. But we don't see, you know, the consequences of everything else being brought to a halt. And that's happening, like, at the very, very minor level, with just, like, kids in elementary school and high school not being able to play their sports. But it's also happening at elite levels, as you mentioned, Ailish. And, you know, it's all about the bottom line. We're seeing NHL games being rescheduled so that you can have fans, which I think is a problem. But we're at some point, these big companies that make all this money off sport have to realize that investment will work out in their favor in the end. And taking a little bit of a hit now to make sure that the game continues, the women's game continues on the path that it's in, so that the big moments, the World Championships, the Olympics, can be at their very best. I mean, I don't know why people can't realize that and why they continue to make these decisions. It shouldn't have been canceled. It should have been at least postponed. Try to figure out a solution before you cancel things. It just seems like everyone has that quick trigger right now, and it's just wrong.
Yeah, and I hate the financial argument, because you know what wasn't a moneymaker until they established it as a marquee tournament over a long term? The World Junior Hockey Championship. It's the same thing you get in the WNBA, where everyone ignores that the WNBA is 25 years old. And when the NBA was 25 years old, you were having franchises fold and move all the time and taking a loss, but you have to build that long term. I think it's the same thing here.
It's the same discussion we have about creating a professional league for women that's sustainable. It's not going to be sustainable in the first year. Like, I get it. You need to invest. You need to understand in 10, 20 years, it could be a moneymaker. It should be a moneymaker. The talent is there. And you saw the outpouring of support from current NHLers to guys at the World Juniors to former elite hockey players, current college players. Like, everybody had something to say about it. And when you're able to just ignore that and double down and be like, oh, well, we're just going to continue with our stance, that's the part that really upset me the most. And I think just even on the same conversation, is it came out, and then right after that, the two final rivalry series games were also canceled due to COVID. And that was the last two opportunities for the Olympic girls, USA versus Canada, to have, you know, a tune-up before Beijing. And they don't have that opportunity now. The roster is going to be finalized on games that were, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago at this point. So I just think it's just a terrible cycle. And it really is upsetting as a women's hockey fan to see these things happening just in the continued, you know, routine, it seems. So I'm hoping that after all this outpouring online, that they can reevaluate. There's one final thing before we go to break. There's actually a change.org petition. I don't know if you guys have seen it, created by a fan, like a petition. I know that these things aren't usually, you know, they're not law, but last time I checked, 72,000 people have signed this petition to reschedule a women's U18 World Championship. So when you say there's no support for women's hockey, that's a pretty big number of people that have online at least just said, hey, let's find a way. So a very positive thing that there's that support, but, you know, it's only because right now there's no platform for women to play.
Ailish, I'm glad you mentioned the professional side, just because I want to replug an interview we had last week. And you can go back and you can get this show, obviously, anywhere you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, wherever. We had an interview with Steph LeBay from the Canadian Women's National Soccer Team. And she was awesome, kind of going into a lot of these same things, but on the soccer side, and why, you know, a tier two domestic league isn't enough. You need things, you need this investment, not only for the business side of sport and to drive viewership and interest, but you also need it from a development perspective. And as you see other countries, you know, Canada on the soccer side is now doing quite well in the women's program. On the hockey side, you don't want other places catching up. And a part of that is, you know, more domestic support. Speaking of soccer, big day for TFC yesterday. They insigned. We're going to talk to Josh Cloak of The Athletic and author of Come On You Reds about that. That's next. The Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, filling in today and tomorrow. Justin Cuthbert. Hope you guys all had a lovely holiday and are having a great start to your Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. I don't really know anymore around the holiday. I never know anyway, but I especially don't know right now. I was about to bring our next guest in and say, hey, there was some big TFC news on Sunday, but it wasn't. It was on Tuesday because today is Wednesday, even though it's the first day of our week. This Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. We're joined now by Josh Cloak, Maple Leafs and soccer writer at The Athletic, author of Come On You Reds, which I noticed on a friend's bookshelf when I was at their place over the holidays. Josh Cloak, good morning.
Good morning. Was it being used as like a coaster? Like, that's always my favorite when my book gets used as like a beer coaster. That's I had someone send me a photo of that over the holidays, and that felt really good for some reason.
No, it was more of a, I have a baby nephew who's teething, and it was more of a, let him jam this in his mouth and he can chew it up. It's fine. No, I'm kidding. It was just sitting on the shelf. But it did get the face out treatment. Like, it was, ooh. I don't know, some people bookshelf and it's just spines out. I like to, Justin Ailes, you can see my bookshelves in my background here. I like to mix up the presentation. And Josh, your book at this friend's house had the face out treatment, which is a big deal. That's for top sellers only.
No, I appreciate that. It's nice to have, you know, a fan besides my mother. So this is this is great.
I think what it indicates is how much money is in Toronto FC, which must be the case because they are reportedly signing Lorenzo, Insigne. Man, walk us through this. How close is this to being officially done, and how big a deal is this for TFC?
Yeah, I mean, first things first, this is a massive deal. But in terms of how close this is to being done, you know, I know Michael Singh of Waking the Red reported yesterday that it was done. And, you know, I just want to be clear, this isn't to discount his reporting at all. I think we all know the way it works. Different people have different sources. I haven't been able to lock it down as being done. And, you know, we saw this morning and yesterday, Fabrizio Romano, which is, you know, the Bob McKenzie of international soccer transfers, he's tweeting about this as well. So that kind of gives you an idea of how big this is. And, you know, he's tweeting and other people are talking about how this is very, very close to being done. Is it possible that there's a verbal agreement in place? Sure. But, you know, the January transfer window is when things kind of happen and that's when deals can become official. I think if you're, you know, a Toronto FC fan who wants this to happen, you're probably worried that, you know, that maybe there's a verbal agreement in place and then Insigne's agent can kind of take this to other teams and say, look, here's what we have. Are you willing to match it? So there's always the possibility that could, you know, fall apart at the last hour. But he's being offered outrageous sums of money that would triple the highest salary ever recorded in MLS. So, you know, at some point for any person, it becomes difficult to kind of turn that kind of money down. So, yeah, again, very possible there's a verbal agreement in place, but I don't know if pen has been put to paper yet. Your second question in terms of how big a deal this would be, this would undoubtedly be their biggest signing ever. It's funny, Blake, I was thinking about you yesterday. I remember when Kawhi was traded to Toronto, and you know, I don't really know a ton about the NBA, and I asked you personally. We were out at some athletic event, and I asked you, I'm like, how big a deal is this really? And you looked me just stone cold in the face, and you just said, he will be the best Raptor ever. And I kind of said, okay. Like, I mean, that was, you know, I'm like, he hasn't played a game yet. He'd just been traded like 2 days earlier, and you were just convinced he'll be the best Raptor ever. So I guess I was thinking about that, and I'll tell you, he would be the best player in MLS. He would probably be the best player, you know, in TFC history, and undoubtedly one of the best players in league history. So it would really be kind of a, you know, a shattering move in terms of the construct of MLS, because he's a global star right now, right?
So I don't mean this in a knock to the MLS or to TFC, but why would a player of this, I don't know, pedigree, of this history and this talent come to this, make this decision? Like, what is it that would force someone to do this, or attract someone to do this? I mean, it seems like an incredible move, but I'm a pretty baseline soccer fan, and my first question was like, wow, how did that happen? Why would that happen?
I mean, the money first and foremost would be outrageous, right? He's being offered something like 4 or 5 times what he's being offered by Napoli, his current club. So there's that. Second of all, I mean, we've seen Toronto FC management kind of work their magic before. It's not as if they haven't convinced great players who maybe weren't at the height of their powers, but, you know, were very good players in their own right to come. You know, you think about Jermaine Defoe, you know, who was trying to get back into the England squad. You think about Sebastian Giovinco, who was just removed from the Italian squad. What you sell them on, and again, this is, you mentioned, you know, the book, Come On You Reds, when talking to people, talking to those players about those deals, it was the city of Toronto. You know, it was the allure of bringing a family to a really safe and clean, and let's face it, a great world-class city. That matters a lot to people who are a little bit older, you know, again, who have a family and who want some kind of stability. You're going to have difficulty if you're Toronto FC recruiting, you know, a 24-year-old who maybe doesn't have a family, and those kind of things aren't a priority. So I think it's the money, it's Toronto, and it's just an opportunity to kind of be the face of a league, right? Like, anytime you boost someone's ego enough, eventually I think that the tide starts to turn and you become kind of incentivized to make that move.
Josh, why wouldn't the money be there in Europe? I don't want to suggest like this is happening at all, but something we've seen in this market is, you know, the Raptors or Blue Jays roped into a discussion around a player because maybe they're trying to use this market or one of those teams as leverage. Would that at all fall into this? Like, the big money on the table, would that get anyone else's attention in Europe? And if not, why isn't the money out there for a world-class player? Does this reflect on something in the European market in terms of you know, the going rate and what's happening with players and the transfer of players?
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. But I think if you're a team in Europe, especially if you're a team not in England or not in La Liga in Spain, you know, those two leagues are considered kind of the final stop for players. If you're one of those teams in another league, Germany, Italy, France, you're always thinking about what kind of value can I get from selling this player on afterwards. And I don't know how much value you can get from a 30-year-old Lorenzo Insigne. And that's not to say he can't contribute, right? He had 19 goals in 35 Serie A games last year. That's really, really impressive. I think fifth or sixth in the league, right? That's really, really impressive. And that speaks to the caliber of the player. But at 30, it becomes difficult if you sign a player to, you know, a 3-year deal, even a 2-year deal. You're not really looking at any kind of sell on afterwards, right? You're kind of looking at a player that is on, I guess we could say, the wrong side of their kind of career, their trajectory. And that's important for teams in Europe that have lost a lot of money. And again, if you're TFC, yes, you've lost a lot of money over the last 2 years, but you've also lost a lot of standing in this city, in MLS. Like, they were known as one of the preeminent franchises in MLS. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to call last year their worst year in league history, just because of, you know, how far they fell off, and just, they were such an afterthought in this city. I think that really mattered to a lot of people at MLSC. I think that mattered to Bill Manning, Toronto FC's president, right? If you look at the kind of, if you look at the big name transfers that he's brought in, he wasn't there for Giovinco. He wasn't there for Jermaine Defoe. Yes, he was there for Alejandro Pozuelo, but he needs kind of this big ticket swing to really put Toronto FC back on the map. And, you know, you look at the attendance numbers last year for TFC when they were here, they were awful, just awful. And I think they know that, you know, if you bring Insigne in, there's just a guaranteed attendance there. And, you know, again, if you're Toronto FC, you've signed a player who's going to go, we assume, to a World Cup. And, you know, anytime this player is mentioned on a broadcast, Toronto FC is going to get mentioned, you know, in a World Cup broadcast. You can't really pay for that kind of exposure, right?
Do you think there's an additional level of urgency on TFC's side to do something like that because of the momentum we're seeing where, hey, the Canadian women's soccer program is the class of international soccer right now. The men's program could be heading to the World Cup for the you know, the six games left in these qualifiers. We're a month out now from the next window. It feels like the time to capitalize on the growth and excitement around Canadian soccer. So I guess what I'm saying is was there an extra layer of, we got to do this now for TFC because, hey, you got to strike while this is hot and you don't want to be an afterthought of what is, you know, the next wave of Canadian soccer boom?
Yeah, I think so. But I just think as well, like when you fire you part ways with your general manager, you bring on a new coach, you know, this is very much a rebuild for Toronto FC. And I think they just need a face, right? And you look at, they've done this before, right? The bloody big deal, you know, with Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley, that was a really, sorry, but that was a big deal in this city. Toronto FC were popular and cool again. And they haven't been popular or kind of cool for, you know, I would say the last 2 years. And again, I think that's what matters. Of course, you know, soccer is kind of being talked about in a different manner. It's being mentioned on hockey broadcasts. Like, people are aware of what kind of, that soccer is no longer this fringe sport. I don't know how much that matters to Toronto FC because, you know, again, you go back to 15, 16, 17, this was a team that was selling out every game and they were kind of rivaling, I think, the Jays, or there was momentum there with the Jays. It was a, you know, it was kind of a cool time to just be a sports fan in the summer in Toronto. And I just think Toronto FC want that back. They just want to be talked about more. They want to be relevant. And, you know, this kind of big signing would go a long way to helping them, you know, regain that relevancy.
So this is obviously a super positive push for the TFC. Do you expect any more moves to come after a signing of this sort? Does it signal more attractiveness towards Toronto? Does anybody say, hey, I want to be there too after this?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's why you have to get this one done first. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've seen this happen before. We've seen this happen with other teams, right? We, you know, anytime a team lands a player of this caliber, people take notice and people say, what's happening there? Why would a player like Lorenzo Insigne, what does he see there? You know, and then you're able to kind of sell agents a little easier and say, look at our training grounds. Look at what we provide. Like, look what we can provide players. I think Toronto FC, I mean, as we know, they have three designated player spots. A designated player is a player that can be paid technically whatever the club wants. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really fall under the salary cap. It's a minimal salary cap hit. They have three designated players right now. I believe that two of those players will be gone. Josie Altidore and Jefferson Soteldo. I think one will be transferred out and I suspect the other one will be bought out. So I think there's room for another big signing. There's been a few other Italian forwards that have been kind of in the rumor mill. I don't know if you're there yet, right? You have to get Insigne done. And then again, you can parlay that, right? You can go to other agents and you can say, look, you want to be part of this, don't you? Like, you want to be part of this kind of wave, I guess. So it wouldn't be Insigne and done. I think you would see another designated player. And then I do think towards the end, I do ultimately think somehow they probably find a way with Sebastian Giovinco, definitely not on a designated player deal, even though that's what the player wants. It kind of reminds me of that, the bloody big deal. And in 2014, when you bring in Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley, but you also bring back Dwayne DeRosario as kind of the, you know, the loyal kind of Torontonian who can kind of show these new players the way and teach them a little bit about club culture, that kind of thing. So it really wouldn't surprise me if Giovinco does come back once they get these other deals done. But yeah, I guess to answer your question, you know, if we look 2 months in the future, best case scenario, you've got Insigne and you've probably got another very high profile player to take that other DP slot.
Josh, we can't have you on without touching on the Maple Leafs a little bit. There was a moment last year with Jake Muzzin, who basically suggested that, you know, the team that, and I thought it was very predictive, that a team that best deals with COVID is going to have success last year. Now, clearly the Leafs have been dealing with a COVID outbreak, and it's not humbling in any way that the organization should feel that way, because this was sort of inevitable, as we've realized. But do you sense any concern as the Leafs made their way back to MasterCard Center that there's any concern over how this moment of time, this outbreak, and what they're dealing with right now might impact the team's success here moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's probably concern about just the physical well-being of the players. You know, you had players and coaches yesterday talk about how, you know, that first skate back was probably just as difficult, if not more difficult, than the first day of training camp, right? Because players, you know, have you know, are a little bit out of shape. They've been gassed. Their lungs have been impacted. So I think there's probably a concern there, right? But I also think if you look around the league, they're not the only team that has had multiple games paused and, you know, have lost some momentum in the season. I think if you can get players back to health and you can get that conditioning back, that's probably going to be the key for this team to kind of get back on track. And I don't know if thankfully is the right word here, but they have a lot of time off, right? You look at their schedule, they're going to have, I think, 4 games in 4 weeks. And, you know, it's just not a lot of games. And I think if you can, you know, work on your conditioning as a team and kind of get everybody back to full health, you would think that given kind of the momentum they were on and just given how much they've improved defensively as a team and just how structured they've been playing, that they should be able to get their season back on track. But look, it's hard to do, right? Getting COVID it impacts everybody differently. And there's no, just because, you know, you're symptom free after 10 days, that doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to be back to full health, I guess, for the rest of your life. We still don't know a lot about that. So I think the physical well-being is probably the thing that could impact players, but I do know, you know, Sheldon Keefe is probably going to put some time into making sure that the conditioning is a focus of practices here on in.
Yeah, I would say, you know, having witnessed the Raptors side of things where guys haven't had the benefit of practices coming back, that's a huge edge for these NHL teams, not over each other, but just in general, where we saw, you know, Delano Banton come back and he's supposed to be capped around 20 minutes and he's gassed. And Siakam last night saying after the game that he was exhausted the entire game. And we've heard those effects in high symptomatic cases and lower symptomatic cases. So maybe a small positive for the Leafs there. A big positive for this show, having Josh Kloak on. Josh, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Oh, anytime. Thanks so much, guys.
Josh Kloak, Maple Leafs and Soccer at The Athletic, author of Come On, You Reds, and That Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Guys, I want to spin it back to Insigne. Again, the Giovinco comment was interesting because I was reading this morning, and I'm sure the Football Italia website is maybe eager to not frame all of this in the most positive light. But there were comments from Giovinco that said basically he thinks that it hurt coming to TFC hurt his visibility and his standing with the national team. But, and this is a quote, if you are open to leaving these things behind, then it's the experience I suggest to everyone. Toronto is a wonderful city in a beautiful country. He talked about the Italian community and how much he liked it here. But he also made a comment of, I was promised money that was not there, but I don't want to discuss these details. So I wonder the feasibility of bringing him back into the fold, if there is any residual stuff there. Or maybe you just, hey, maybe you make him whole now by coming correct on this this later career deal at age 34.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like money would ever really be an issue. That's certainly interesting. But I also, like, my ears perked up a little bit when Josh said that, you know, TFC is going to have someone at the World Cup for sure. And yes, Insigne played a huge role at this last Euro last summer for Italy. And my neighbors here in Woodbridge certainly let me know what happened in that final as an English soccer fan myself. But we have seen, I don't know if it's a black ball sort of situation, but there's been excuses. If you leave Italy, hey, maybe you're not going to be on the national team. We're seeing it right now with the Russians at the World Juniors. So to put him into that lineup in Penn, maybe it's more complicated than that. I feel like that shouldn't be an issue, certainly because he played such an important role for Italy just this year. But again, maybe I'm a little bit of a pessimist here, but I don't know if we're going to guarantee to see TFC mentioned as part of a World Cup starting lineup next year.
Yeah, 53 national team caps, but in a deeper program and at age 30, 31 when that rolls around next, you know, it wouldn't be the toughest of cases to be like, you know what, split hair, let's go with the guy playing domestically. The other, and I don't want to be reductive about this because, obviously not every Italian player coming to TFC is the same, but the framing for me as a relative soccer novice, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday and I was asking, you know, I remember Giovinco coming over and it was a huge deal and he scored 68 goals in 114 games for TFC. That's really successful. And I asked what the comparison was or how this compared to Insigne. And the overwhelming response was just that, like, this is a much, much bigger deal in terms of caliber of player coming over. So it's huge. It's really exciting. He's coming off a season where he was the, I think, seventh leading scorer in Italy. This is fun. It's a lot. It's great. And I know we don't always want to lump things together like the women's program and the men's program and TFC and stuff like that. But I think, you know, at least the vibe in Toronto as a soccer city, all this stuff pulls in the same direction. So if this gets done this week officially or January when the transfer window more officially opens, nice little push, especially because we're only a couple weeks out from more FIFA qualifiers.
No, I think you make a tremendous point. I mean, now's the time. Soccer has never been hotter, I think, in this country, and maybe not in this city because TFC's had so much recent success. But I'm excited for what the next move might be. I mean, getting rid of those designated players and, you know, creating that blank slate. Who wants to come play with Insigne? I'm sure there are a lot of players, as Josh mentioned, who would want to be a part of it. So definitely exciting time to be a TFC fan. When this deal goes through, I think we expect that, but is there another shoe to drop? Probably and pretty soon.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And you can see the momentum of things like soccer in this country picking up, similar to how basketball has picked up in this country. Never has that been more obvious than this past week where four players were called up to the NBA who have played in the Canadian Elite Basketball League. That is kind of an off-season league that runs almost parallel to the G League. It's still in its relative infancy, but very, very cool to graduate its first four players to the NBA in the last week. To help us break that down and what it means for the future of the league and a domestic option for Canadian players, Mike Morreale, the commissioner of the CEBL. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.